All right, welcome to Crossroads. And you might have been watching the internet over the weekend. Donald Trump has literally been devastating our enemies and posting videos making fun of them on the internet. I don't think we've seen anything like this before. But in the big show's strength, basically, America's back, baby. Trump is just blowing up our enemies, and it is one thing to watch. He is showing devastating war powers, blowing up ships, posting videos making fun of them. The show of force with this, it's, you know, you can watch the entertainment value, but it actually means something. This is reasserting the fighting prowess of the United States. And also importantly on that, it put a big serious dent in the global plans of the Chinese Communist Party. A lot of their weapon systems are shown to be basically useless against America. And also on this conflict, something else. Without its source of cheap oil from Venezuela and Iran, the Chinese Communist Party could actually be facing some pretty serious economic troubles. They are not doing so hot right now. Also, another topic, in order to protect the illegal aliens from deportation, Democrats in Congress, well, they blocked funding to the Department of Homeland Security right when America is under threat of domestic terrorism. We'll be talking about these topics and a whole lot more today, so make sure to hit the like button. Let's get started. All right, look. Within just a few days, the U.S., working with Israel, basically destroyed Iran's entire fighting force. We destroyed their anti-aircraft systems. Doing that, we basically dominate the skies. They have no way to defend against us. Trump is even rolling in with like retrofitted B-2 bombers from World War II. Defense systems provided to the CCP and, you know, by the CCP to Iran, they were destroyed. Shown to be basically useless. The Iranian fleet of warships have been sunk. We haven't seen this since World War II. And the leaders of the Iranian regime were killed. Targeted strikes, leadership decapitation. They're dead. And then they appointed replacements, and then they blew them up also. Now, this show of force has done something important. The United States is again kind of demonstrating what we're capable of, and maybe not even fully. This is putting a big serious dent also in the global plans of the Chinese Communist Party, internationally, economically, militarily. The whole thing is getting blown up right now. And the timing on this is important because look, the Chinese Communist Party was trying to build an alternative system to the United States. Anybody who's watched Crossroads for a long time, they know that I've been talking about this. I never imagined it would be blown up and destroyed so rapidly. It's really just overnight. Everything the CCP has spent decades trying to do has been destroyed. It is incredible to watch. The Chinese Communist Party is trying to build an alternative political system, a defensive system, new alliances or axes, whatever you want to call it, economic alliances. The purpose of all of this, they wanted to overtake the United States. Now, the hard reality of this, some of that was being done with cooperation even from within our own system. Some of it was being done with cooperation from the European Union, especially the European Commission. Some of it was being done with international alliances, NGO networks, you name it. Basically, the plan was to make America one little seat at the global table of global governance. They called it they wanted to have it where they replaced the Pax Americana or the unipolar world order, the order with America as the world leader, with what they call the multipolar world order. The United States being more of a voice on the global table of politics than Uganda or Bangladesh or Mexico. We would just be another seat at the table of governance with no real voice and no real authority. That's what they were trying to do. That entire system now is being thrown out by Trump. President Donald Trump has been saying, no, we're going to dismantle the NGO networks. We're pulling out of the United Nations. We're pushing back against the CCP alliances. We're reasserting the Monroe Doctrine throughout Latin America. Now, importantly on this, they did a report 2025. They noted the CCP, in terms of its military power, basically, had we gone to war with China during the Biden administration, we might not have won. We didn't have wartime production. We didn't have the ability to really fight them. They're coming back now and they're saying that they concluded today China's challenge to the United States is no longer confined to trade disputes or regional security flashpoints. It is systemic, spanning technology, certification standards, use of information, and military power, and accelerating faster than policymakers in Washington can keep up. In other words, had we not done something, it is very possible we could have been overtaken by the Chinese Communist Party. Had America not taken action to dismantle these networks, within a few years, the CCP might have become the world leader. And guess what? That future just literally got blown out of the water. Now look, I want to show you something, okay? Before I go into this, let me show you what the CCP is saying. Have a look at this. The Iranian regime and the Chinese Communist Party were doing propaganda all over X, all over social media. You probably saw some of it. They were claiming Iran destroyed the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier. Now, they didn't. That aircraft carrier is still floating, still fighting, did not get sunk. But the CCP and Iran, what they did, they used artificial intelligence to make fake videos for their news broadcasts. Let me show you one of the fake videos they made. Watch this.
当地时间3月1号下午，伊朗伊斯兰革命卫队发布第7号公告说，亚伯拉罕林肯号航母遭到伊朗4枚弹道导弹袭击。伊朗武装部队对敌方军事力量的强力打击已进入新阶段，陆地和海洋都将成为侵略者的坟场。美国方面对此暂无回应。
Amazing, right? Those jets just kind of float away when the ship is blowing up. It's amazing how they just do that, right? Now, look, being serious, that was a fake video. The CCP posted fake videos. This is something we've been seeing pretty commonly. Iran, other countries, they've been seen, for example, using video game footage. The Chinese Communist Party, in one of their older propaganda videos, actually re-edited a scene from Top Gun, the movie, and then claimed that one of their jets was shooting down like an American jet. They're just making fake videos. Now, shortly after this fake video was exposed, though, the United States showed what a video like this actually looks like. The US government posted a video showing what it looks like when a warship gets blown up. This is a video from an American submarine actually blowing up an Iranian warship. I want to emphasize how significant this is. We have not seen the U.S. use a torpedo to sink another warship like this, at least not that we know of, since World War II. What you're watching right now is something we've not seen since the Second World War. And with devastating effect. Basically, we've seen the United States can wipe out an entire military within a few days. We destroyed their anti-aircraft systems. We've seen dogfights, you know, jets fighting each other. Israel actually did that, took out some of the Iranian ones. We've not seen that since, like, I believe the 70s. We just watched, I believe, they're saying now, at least 20 Iranian warships destroyed. America just destroyed an entire navy. An entire navy has been destroyed with no strikes on us. This is something the world has kind of never seen before. This is devastating war power, just absolutely devastating. Now, the odd reality we have with the US military is this. Our military tends to have to fight with one arm tied behind its back, or two arms in some cases. Many conflicts, even Vietnam, you know, troops are not allowed to shoot unless they get shot at first. That was thanks to Congress during the Vietnam War. Our American troops are not allowed to fight unless they get shot at first, meaning, well, don't shoot them unless you get shot, which tends to not work very well in, like, you know, wars that revolve around ambushes. The American military has always been hamstrung. We've never been able to demonstrate our full fighting capabilities. The Trump administration right now, they say the focus is on lethality. They're saying we're not going to play these little games anymore. We are going to show the full force of what America is capable of. And we're kind of witnessing that now. We're seeing things we've never seen before. We're seeing the US military, and look, in terms of military power, Iran is one of the more, like, if you go by like other countries' standards, one of the more powerful military forces in the world. Basically, the Russian military and the Chinese military are similar in terms of capabilities. Russia's actually a little more advanced than them. For example, China can't even build its own jet engines. They have to buy them from Russia. They're not even capable of building the stuff Russia's capable of. We've seen, for example, Iran has kind of the same technical prowess. It's destroyed within a few days. Even the CCP's missile defense systems, which they need to protect themselves with from things like this, destroyed almost instantaneously. They did not work. And this is important also on an economic level, because war is about more than just, you know, blowing up your ships and aircraft and so on too. There's an economic factor to war. And on this conflict, without its sources of cheap oil from Venezuela and Iran, the Chinese Communist Party is probably not going to collapse from this, but it's going to face some major economic troubles, like really serious economic troubles from this. I just check in the chat. Yeah. I see, yeah, some of you, one of you saying that talking about, they said this is going to take maybe 4 weeks or something. Yeah, so they're saying 4 or 5 weeks. It's not clear what the timeline is going to be in terms of this war. I will have to wait and see. Chris Garcia, you're saying, Josh, your computer is rough this morning. Yeah, I know. I really apologize. Unfortunately, we're working with a new studio. We moved to a new office recently. We've been having some technical trouble. So thank you all for sticking with me on this. I really, really apologize for it. It's one of the problems we have. We're trying to get through it, so I do apologize. Now, look, on another topic, though, one of the big problems we have is that cheap oil is kind of under threat. Now, you might be asking, what is America doing about the problem of cheap oil and so on? Well, we kind of made it so Venezuela has to give us their oil, and America is now taking over that business. Now, let me show you this. Politico is talking about this. They say, over the span of 2 months, the Trump administration has removed the leaders of two countries that both shared China as their most important crude oil customer. It says, although China buys oil from nations all across the Middle East, Iran was the second only to Saudi Arabia as its supplier last year, according to a political analysis of data provided by market research firm Kepler. It notes that almost all of Iran's exported oil and more than half of Venezuela's went last year to China, which remained one of the only purchasers of goods from the two heavily sanctioned nations. How did they do that? Black ships, illegal purchases. Normally, if you buy sanctioned product, well, you get punished. China was never facing that. Things have changed now. It says the two countries combined represented some 17% of China's overall oil purchases, a meaningful share of the world's largest importer of crude oil. Now, 17% is still a lot. It's not everything. They can buy from alternative sources. If you want to get my take, what's the likely change in this? Trump is probably going to use oil sales to China as part of his upcoming business deal. Trump's trying to make a deal with China. Part of that will likely be they're going to have to pay us normal price, or Trump is going to do it as an exchange for rare earth minerals. He's probably not going to collapse the CCP. He has the power to. I doubt he's going to do it. I wish he would, but he's probably not going to do it. This will be bad for China, no matter how you look at it, though, because they kind of price gouge even their allies. They price gouge them. So they've been buying these barrels of oil for pennies on the dollar, basically. Trump is probably going to charge them full price. And if he's charging them full price, well, he can save them from kind of collapsing from lack of oil. But what's also happening, the American oil industry, because we've now taken this, and especially from like Venezuela, and Trump is even retaking oil fields we built, we're kind of the new Saudis. And look, back to Politico, it says, any new challenges in obtaining oil from the Persian Gulf could drive China to expand its reliance on Russian energy supplies, which, by the way, are also kind of limited. Now, on that point, Russian oil sources, how's that Russian oil source going? Well, apparently the Russian oil source is not going very well either, because guess what? New images are showing a natural gas tanker from Russia's Shadow Fleet not looking so well in the Mediterranean. This Shadow's ship was allegedly hit by an unidentified naval drone and has seen better days. Somebody blew up one of these Russian oil ships. So, like, on that front also, the Chinese Communist Party is trying to do something with this. None of this is, all of this should be seen as interconnected. None of these things are separate from the next. Cuba, the possible coming collapse of the Cuban communist regime, the recent collapse of the Venezuelan regime, they were communist, the new collapse of the Iranian regime, tied in with the communist system internationally, but kind of their own little system. You don't really have a whole lot left for the CCP. Their other two key allies, basically, Russia, you know, not doing so well with its war in Ukraine. They're holding out, but basically without the CCP support, they're not going to keep it going. Basically, the CCP is the enabling factor of that war. North Korea, propped up by the CCP, their only real international powers in criminality, arms trafficking, drug trafficking, and counterfeiting of currency. That's a kind of their economy. They run a lot of things when it comes to international black markets. Key ally of the Chinese Communist Party, regional threat, nothing much to the U.S. We'll see if Trump does something about them. The CCP has a lot of minor allies. Pakistan, unfortunately, South Korea is falling very much in line with the CCP. Now we'll see what happens with that. They have a few other key allies, for example, including in Latin America. Brazil, because of Lula, is on that spectrum. We'll have to see where all this goes. But in terms of what's happening with all of this, as the CCP has been trying to build an axis, trying to build a military defense network, building up allies, saying they're going to defend each other, how is the Chinese Communist Party reacting to this? What is the CCP doing to protect its allies? Let me show you. The CCP's response, in terms of actual tangible effort, is to ask Iran to not block oil shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. The CCP's support to Iran is saying, okay, Iran, good luck, comrade. Please don't block oil shipments because, look, basically, has anybody ever seen, like, it's like a movie where, you know, they're running from a bear, there's a monster coming after them, and, you know, they're both running together. The CCP just put its foot out and tripped the other guy, being Iran, and said, you know, so long, farewell, good luck, you die so that I may live another day. I'll always remember you. That's basically what the CCP is saying to Iran as it runs off into the sunset. The CCP is saying to Iran, thank you for your sacrifice, comrade. Please do not block oil shipments because we need to live while you drift away. I will remember you always. That is the level of support the CCP is showing to Iran right now. Now, like, also though, as this comes to light, all this is happening, we saw the air defense systems of the CCP, and the CCP was doing something important, right? The Chinese Communist Party, as Venezuela was facing trouble, as Iran was facing threats, the CCP was quietly supplying them with military assets, missile defense systems, different types of technologies to protect against the United States. They were saying, look, we're going to give you the systems where if America attacks you, you can destroy the United States. What we've now witnessed, these systems provided to Venezuela and Iran did not block the United States. They were destroyed almost instantly. And as they were destroyed, America almost instantly decapitated the leadership of both countries. We've effectively seen the uselessness, against America at least, the uselessness of these major important economic systems and major important military systems of the CCP. They did not work. They failed to protect them. Major stuff happening right now. Seymour in the chat, I see you're saying, read the book, Poorly Made in China. It is very revealing about how China operates. Seymour, I'm glad you read that book. So Poorly Made in China, it's an older book now, but it's all still very much relevant. Yeah, it talks about this. Do you know the real problem with the Chinese military? All right, let me break the illusion, okay? Let me explain. This is why the Chinese Communist Party's military threats don't really amount to what they say they'll amount to. This is why the Chinese Communist Party's missile defense systems don't really amount to what they say they amount to. This is why they're kind of a paper tiger. The Chinese military and their products are made in China. That's the reason, okay? This is like Temu military. This is like the Temu military. And poorly made in China, the book demonstrates what manufacturing looks like in China. What they do is this. When they go to sell their product, they'll make it very good. So they'll go to market. If you go there to have your product manufactured and they give you a sample product back, they'll show you a very good product. After you buy the initial one, after you sign a contract, they will gradually begin reducing quality. Sometimes they'll even change your formula, sell you a cheaper version of it, claiming it's the same thing. They will patent the formula they made and then steal your product and then sell you basically a license of the cheap thing they made. That's what they do. We've basically seen the same thing now with their military equipment. All right, funny note, we just saw the air defense system fail and Maduro got captured by like the US Space Marines when they rolled him with the discombobulator, which Trump called it, sonic weapon, we believe, guys barfing their guts out, then getting shot, just mowed down by American forces as we literally rolled in, captured their leader and put him on trial in New York City. Same thing, for example, is what happened with Iran. America rolled in, Israel too, bombed the heck out of them, destroyed the Chinese air defense systems, have effectively now gotten full control of the sky to the point where we can send in literal World War II era bombers to blow them up because they do not have the capability to shoot them down. Does anybody know what happened with Russia when Russia was trying to rapidly invade and take over Ukraine? The Russian invasion force got stuck in the mud. That's what happened. That's why the whole thing got delayed. Do you know why they got stuck in the mud? Their vehicles had made in China tires. The made in China tires of the Russian military force got flat tires and they got stuck in the mud. Thank you, China. That was the problem. Again, the made in China military does not work. Also, meanwhile, another topic right here in the United States, in order to protect illegal aliens from deportation, what has happened? Democrats in Congress blocked funding to the Department of Homeland Security. And this is going to be a very big deal right now because we're facing actually a lot of terror threats because of the collapse of Iran. What is the purpose of the Department of Homeland Security? To protect the homeland from terrorists. That's why it was started during the Bush administration. This was to protect us from terrorists. Now, this shutdown of it, the defunding of DHS, is from the partial government shutdown that started February 14th. And guess what? As DHS is being shut down to protect illegal aliens, the war with Iran has started, and now we're facing large-scale threats from Iranian sleeper agents and lone wolf terrorists. If we've ever needed the DHS, it's kind of now, and we don't have it because we want to stop them from deporting illegal aliens. We do not have the Department of Homeland Security operating fully right now because apparently protecting illegals is more important than protecting Americans from terrorists. The entire reason we have the DHS in the first place. Now, this could actually be important because, look, if a terrorist attack happens, and there actually have been a couple already, this could actually become a major key issue for the midterm elections. If it turns out, hey, Congress, look, why do we have DHS? Well, to protect us from terror threats. When we've probably never faced a greater threat from terrorism, you have shut down DHS because you don't want criminal aliens from going back to their own countries. This is a big deal. And on that point also, look, we already saw one terror attack that may have been related to this. I would say it probably is, in my personal opinion. But look, this is what happened. The guy was both a terrorist and a migrant. This was a Senegalese migrant, Nadia Dionje. He killed three people in a shooting spree at a bar in Austin, Texas. Now, the media would tell you, a lot of them, well, we don't know the motive. Was this a terrorist attack? Was it just a mentally ill individual? The guy was wearing a hoodie that said literally, property of Allah, okay? Now, the attack was stopped by three local police officers, heroes in Texas. Guess what has now happened? After a terrorist attack, after these hero police officers stopped a terrorist attack, after DHS was shut down to protect illegal aliens as a migrant terrorist killed three people, the police officers who stopped this are now facing a grand jury investigation. This is the New York Post. Three hero Austin cops who put their lives on the line to stop a maniac's deadly shooting rampage are expected to face a grand jury investigation. Let that sink in. Police stop a terrorist attack, and the police are now facing a criminal investigation. Thank you, George Floyd, because that's where this comes from. It says, this is a George Floyd era policy. It says this, Texas lawyer Doug O'Connell, whose firm O'Connell West, has been tapped to represent the officers at the behest of the Austin Police Association, told the Post on Tuesday that such mandatory reviews are the brainchild of Austin District Attorney Jose Garza. He says, quote, the district attorney at the direction of the Wren Collective insists on presenting every officer involved shooting to a grand jury, O'Connell said, referencing a shadowy and influential left-wing Austin-based criminal justice reform group. Thank you, George Floyd. You stop a terrorist attack, you're going to go on trial. Now, the lawyer said, quote, we believe that our clients will face the same process. Hasn't started yet, but they're saying it's probably going to happen because of the whole George Floyd thing. That is the procedure. The officers who stopped a literal terrorist attack are now facing a grand jury investigation. What a wild time. All right, just checking the chat. All right, let's see here. Yeah, Seymour, you're saying Austin, Texas. Now that's a whole different world, right? Yeah, it's changed a lot. Texas is not the same Texas it used to be. Yeah, wild times. Martin McKenzie in the chat, you're saying, the great hope of the Democrat Party is illegal aliens who will eventually vote. They are cynical and evil and treasonous. Well, you know, it's hard because you have to actually at some point question, why do they care so much about protecting illegal aliens? If you look at polling, there's a couple important things here. In terms of voter ID, and in New York City, the Democratic Socialist mayor, he's literally Democratic Socialist America, says if you want to shovel snow, you have to show at least two forms of ID. So if you want to shovel snow, according to Democrat policies in New York City, you have to show ID. But if you want to vote in an election, it is racist if you have to show ID. What is the logic here? Why is it not racist to show ID to shovel snow, but it is racist to require an ID to vote in an election? Why is this discrepancy here? What is the actual reason for it? Does that make sense? Is this logical? I don't know. I don't think so. Why is it that an 80-20 issue, 70 to 80% of Democrats, actually, or voters in general, believe that voter ID is good? So why is the party itself opposed to what the voters themselves want? Why is there a discrepancy between the voters and the representatives? Why do they care about that? Why is it that mass deportations is also an 80-20 issue, including among Democrats? Actually, American voters, on an overwhelmingly large margin, you could say actually in some instances it's over half of Democrats. This is actually an 80-20 issue on many fronts, meaning not everybody believes in it, but it is an 80-20 issue. Not only believes in deportations of criminal aliens, but of every single illegal alien in the United States. So why is it that an 80-20 issue is so important, again, not representing the voters, the Democrats in Congress are willing to literally shut down the Department of Homeland Security when we're facing major terrorist threats in order to protect illegal aliens from being deported? Why is that? It doesn't make logical sense, in my opinion. Is this about voting? Well, some of them have stated that. Do they all believe in that? I don't know. But many of them have stated, yes, this is about future voters. This is about elections. And if you can bring in a voting block where the political policy, Republicans are saying, we're going to deport you. Democrats are saying, we're going to protect you and give you free housing and free food and free medical care. Who are you going to vote for, obviously, right? Who are you going to vote for, obviously? If you create a voting bloc dependent on one political party, they will probably vote for that political party, very likely. So yes, I would say practically they are creating that. Now, like also, meanwhile, with mass deportations, it was actually unclear what was going to happen with the DACA recipients. Remember the Dreamers? Basically, the kids who came in, illegal aliens, into the United States, their parents brought them in. It was said, look, these kids did not choose this. Their illegal alien parents brought them to the United States. The kids are illegal aliens. But the Obama administration said that we would not deport these kids. They called them Dreamers. It was a future issue, DACA recipients, right? The Department of Homeland Security is now saying DACA recipients, Dreamers, are now in fact up for deportation. They are being deported. Although something important, it seems that they're mostly still going after criminals. So if you're a DACA recipient and you commit a crime, they will deport you. Homeland Security said this publicly, quote, to be clear, DACA, Dreamers, DACA does not confer any form of legal status in this country. Any illegal alien who is a DACA recipient, meaning even if you're DACA, you are still an illegal alien. They say they may be subject to arrest and deportation for a number of reasons, including if they've committed a crime, meaning even if you're not a criminal alien, if you're a DACA recipient, you are in fact up for deportation. They say between January 20, 2025 and September 28, 2025, ICE arrested 264 DACA recipients nationwide, and more than 92% were illegal aliens charged or convicted of a crime in the United States. Now, importantly on that, less than 300 deported, that's not a lot. They're not like, it doesn't seem they're actively going after DACA recipients. It does not seem to be the case. That is not a lot nationwide. Again, you have a lot of these kids, and under 300 deported is not a serious margin, like, at all. So, you know, DACA, I don't know, are you under threat of deportation? Yes, you are. How serious is it? As of now, not that serious. So we'll have to see. Like, also another topic, something else is happening right now. While we're watching America, okay, so the United States took out Maduro in Venezuela, left a lot of the government in charge there. People were saying, well, gee, what's going to happen to Venezuela? A lot of the government doesn't like us. Trump is saying, look, leave them be. This is not an ideology thing. They're all corrupt. All these people are corrupt, frankly. They're all part of the cartel. They're all looped in with it. You're rarely going to find a non-corrupt official in a cartel-controlled country. It's just how it works. But he's saying, you know what they care about money. These are financially motivated people. Corruption is the wheels that is the grease that keeps the system turning, right? And so if you use economic interest, they're going to work with you. Suddenly Venezuela is working with the United States. The whole thing is running smoothly, and that entire communist dictatorship is now basically an American ally. The Trump administration is going into other countries in Latin America and saying, we're going to uproot and destroy the cartels. We're in Mexico now, taking out their leaders of the cartels. Mexico's doing it too. We're also now doing it in Ecuador. We don't have many details on this, but the U.S. has now announced the United States of America, as we speak, has now launched a joint military operation in Ecuador. And they're saying we're fighting terrorists. Who are the terrorists? Narco-terror organizations, meaning the cartels. This is the announcement from U.S. Southern Command. It says this. On March 3rd, Ecuadorian and U.S. military forces launched operations against designated terrorist organizations in Ecuador. It says the operations are a powerful example of the commitment of partners in Latin America and the Caribbean to combat the scourge of narco-terrorism. They say together we are taking decisive action to confront narco-terrorists who have long inflicted terror, violence, and corruption on citizens throughout the hemisphere. And they say this, quote, "We commend the men and women of the Ecuadorian Armed Forces for their unwavering commitment to this fight, demonstrating courage and resolve through continued action against narco-terrorists in their country." And it's according to the Southern Command commander, that's General Francis L. Donovan. Big deal. I mean, seriously, this is a very big deal. So what is the situation in Ecuador? So when I was actually in Panama doing investigations into the border crisis, many of you saw the documentary I did. It was called Weapons of Mass Migration. You can watch it on Epic TV. I actually spoke with a lot of people who are fleeing Ecuador. In fact, most of the people I met in the Darien Gap were from Ecuador. And what were they telling me? What these people told me is that Ecuador has effectively been destabilized. Five gangs control the country. Now, similar to like El Salvador, where Bukele came in and he's going after crime, similar, for example, to Argentina, where Milei came in and he's, you know, again, going after a lot of the bad economic policy. Same thing in Ecuador. You actually have a more conservative aligned new president, very young guy, and he says he's going to go after crime. So Ecuador currently has a pretty good leader, at least in my opinion, has a pretty good leader. He does want to go after the gangs. The problem is, and the problem that was raised to me by Ecuadorian migrants when I was in Panama talking to them was this. They did not believe the Ecuadorian military and police were strong enough to fight the gangs. The country is controlled by gangs. And they were concerned any effort to do it, anybody who tries will be killed because the gangs control so much of the country. The entire country has been brought to its knees by these criminals, by cartels. And so the U.S. is now working with the government there to go and kill these gang members, to wipe them out. Now, U.S. Southern Command is not really giving us a lot of details on this. This is important, though. Why is that? The United States is now reasserting our policy, or kind of, it's more like a commitment, you could say. The Monroe Doctrine. They're now calling it the Donroe Doctrine. The securing of the entire Americas, North America, Central America, South America, by the United States. What is the other reality of narco-terrorist organizations? It is this. A lot of cartels are not just criminal organizations. A lot of them are Maoist, meaning China-trained terrorists. You have Shining Path, you have FARC, for example. You have new gangs that work together with China, work together with Russia, and work together with Iran in Latin America. Because this sounds crazy, but Iran, China, and Russia actually have huge influence throughout Latin America. You have literal Hezbollah political parties in parts of Latin America. And these work very closely with the cartels. The business, because what happened over time, a lot of this is done through what's called the Foro ao Sao Paulo, the Forum of Sao Paulo, which was an organization established by Castro and Lula, who's currently in charge of Brazil, Fidel Castro in Cuba, of course. They established what's called the Foro ao Sao Paulo. The Foro ao Sao Paulo basically facilitated a lot of the takeover of left-wing, like far left, like socialist or communist governments all throughout Latin America between the late 90s and early 2000s. These organizations also normalized criminality. FARC used to be part of the Foro ao Sao Paulo, for example, okay? A literal narco-terrorist organization was part of this political organization. And what they did was this. They said the way to solve crime in Latin America was to no longer go after the cartels. The governments effectively decriminalized cartel operations. And when they did that, criminality and corruption became part of the political structures. Basically, if you said you're going to go after the cartels or the narco-terrorists, they would literally kill you. And so it became almost impossible to become a politician if you were going to go after the gangs and cartels. The cartels became part of the political structure. That is the problem of these things. Now, I've said before, drugs and corruption should not be seen as merely criminality. It is also a political tool. This is the kind of tactic you would find under Machiavellianism. Machiavelli, of course, Italian, kind of, I don't know you call it, semi-integrated into communism, but it's really how to create a mafia state. How do you control a country using a mafia? Let me explain. If a country is controlled by corruption, if all of your politicians are corrupt, if your businesses are corrupt, if your economy is corrupt, whoever controls the corruption controls the country. Do you understand? Whoever controls the corruption controls the country. And if you can spread corruption to the extent that the entire country is corrupt, you can control the country by weaponizing corruption. That is what the cartels are. That's why the CCP is involved in the drug trade. That's why Iran and narco-terrorism is involved in the drug trade. You can control countries, control criminality, meaning assassins, smuggling networks, human trafficking, by controlling corruption. If you spread corruption, if you're the one doing it, you control the country. Simple as that. They're trying to do it in America too. But this is how they've brought most of Latin America under their control. That is how this works. Alfred's mom in the chat, you're saying drugs were allowed to get too big. Now they're too big to take down. Yeah, that's the problem too. So drugs also should not be seen as merely merely products on a market. You know, you're talking about a multi-trillion-dollar industry. Does anybody remember the post-9/11 propaganda against drugs? If you do drugs, you're supporting terrorism. Why was that? And that's true, by the way. Doing drugs does, in fact, support terrorism. Why is that? It's because the cartels, well, they're literally designated terrorists right now, they're tied in with terrorist networks. Why is it that opium was one of the big products of Afghanistan and the Taliban? Same reason. These organizations fund their operations using drugs. Let me explain the nexus of terrorism, narco-terrorism, cartels, corruption, and foreign governments in Latin America. Let me explain, okay? This is how the system works. Let me explain how the entire system works. The Chinese Communist Party, under Mao Zedong, established the drug war. This was actually started by the CCP, and Mao Zedong went through networks in Cuba, working together with Fidel Castro to establish the drug networks. A lot of the early drug networks were established by Cuban intelligence forces. Cuban intelligence went in, worked with cartels. The cartels got training in China. They were Maoist-trained communist revolutionaries. They went into their countries, had political parties. As Cuba was working together to establish that, they worked together with Brazil later on, under Castro again, but Lula at the time, worked together with Brazil to establish a political structure that integrated the cartels, that being, of course, the Forum of Sao Paulo, the Foro of Sao Paulo. Castro then worked with Lula, with Chavez, Hugo Chavez, and remember, Maduro was handpicked by both Castro and Chavez to take over what they created. And then, of course, Maduro was part of the cartel of the Suns, meaning the government was integrated and the military as part of a drug cartel. Worked together with Chavez to push out the United States using this new political structure and to bring in business, politics from Iran, Russia, and China. So this was a multi-tiered structure. As they did this, what happened? The new political parties protected the cartels. As the cartels were protected, they got more money. As they got more money, they used the money to finance political campaigns. So the money from drugs became part of the political money. More political money meant more political power. More political power meant more legalization or decriminalization of the cartels, Less criminalization of the cartels meant more power for the cartels. More power for the cartels meant they could crush the enemies of their rivals politically. And so you had politicians come up who were fully in line with the cartels because the cartels were too powerful, too financially powerful, too politically connected to take down. And so criminality and politics went hand in hand. This was being done intentionally by China. That is why the Chinese Communist Party supplies the precursor chemicals for the cartels. It is why the Chinese Communist Party does the money laundering for the cartels. It is why the Chinese Communist Party provides the synthetic drugs for the cartels. It is why the Chinese Communist Party protects the leadership tied in with the cartels, like in Venezuela with Maduro, for example. It is why they do this. If you can create a system of corruption that can control a country, if you control the corruption, you control the country. That is the truth of drugs. That is what drugs are, politically at least. Yvonne in the chat, apparently the only color that matters with money is green. Yeah, right? Yeah, no identity politics here. If it's green, it talks. All right, everyone, that said, thank you all for being here. Let me know in the chat, what do you think? Before you go, don't leave yet. I have a new show. It's the Josh Phillip Show. The Josh Phillip Show. It airs today, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. This is going to be, of course, on YouTube. So no matter where you are, watch it on YouTube. Let me show you a trailer of our episode today. Let me show you right now. There's been a fundamental shift in what it means to buy something. And this change happens so slowly, you might not have even noticed it. In the past, if you bought a movie, you go to the store, you'd browse the shelves of DVDs, pick up the one you want, bring it home. You could watch it anytime. You could let a friend borrow it. If you got bored of the movie, you could sell it online or at a used video store. But you can't really do that these days. Now, if you buy a movie, it tends to be digital. You can stream it. If you're not connected to the internet, you might not be able to watch it. You cannot let a friend borrow it, and you're also not able to resell it. Why? Well, because you don't actually own it. In fact, on some products, this is even part of the terms of service. You rent it, effectively. You get a license to use it. And this trend may soon encompass not just that, but everything, from your movies and games to your household appliances, even your car, even your bed. This ties into what's being called the service-based economy. And it's actually an exchange. You know, in exchange for that, you get ongoing service. But you also never really own what you buy. All right, let me know what you think about it. Basically, the new episode airing today is on something important. It's the subscription-based economy. You could call it like a live service economy or the service economy. What is this? Does anybody remember that weird video? You will own nothing and you will be happy. Basically, it's that. There is an agenda, and a lot of businesses are, you could say it's an agenda, you could say it's the evolution of the markets. Basically, a new world where you don't own anything. You rent everything. Everything is a service. You don't really own your car. You pay subscriptions for services. You don't really own your movies or your games. They're subscriptions to services. It's already like that, by the way, in terms of the contracts. You rent a license to use them. You're not actually buying a lot of stuff these days. When you buy a lot of things these days digitally, all you're buying is a license to use it. You do not legally own it. Today's episode goes into this. It's a very important topic. I hope you don't miss it. Again, that's going to be on the Josh Phillip Show on YouTube. The Josh Phillip Show on YouTube. Link in the chat. Check it out. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Also, help me get the word out. This is a brand new show. Trying to get it out there. Check it out today. And thank you again so much for being here, everyone. You all make this possible. That said, thanks again. Check out the link in the chat. I'll see you then. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.